Welcome in. It is the Sports Junkies. Toby Altizer in for the guys today on Memorial Day, celebrating a nice Memorial Day weekend for the guys. As we start on Memorial Day, I want to say thank you to all those that have served, and especially today, remember those that have paid the ultimate sacrifice for our country. Always grateful for those that have served our country. Much better men than me. Much better men than me, for sure. And women as well. Much better people than me, should I say. Much better Americans than me. So, got plenty to talk about today. Want to get into some NBA talk. We'll get into that in just a couple of minutes. Last night, another thrilling game. Want to take a look at the Juan Soto deal again. It seems like national media has kind of jumped all over this again with Robert Hassel III making his debut this past week. Also, you had Juan Soto and some of the, the drama in New York. So we'll get into that coming up at around 7 o'clock. Want to get into some questions you have for the Commanders headed into the season around 8 o'clock. And Bobby Blanco of MassinSports.com going to join us in studio for the final hour coming up at 9 o'clock. So we'll get into some Nationals talk with him. Also a diehard D.C. sports fan, so we'll get some of his thoughts on the pressing matters of the current time here in D.C. Want to start, though, by looking at something, because I saw MLB Network was throwing this up there in remembrance of Memorial Day today. They threw up a name, Ted Williams, and some of the guys that served in World War II. And just wanted to look at this real quick, because it's crazy to me that we talk about players and compare them to different guys, Juan Soto being one that's been compared to Ted Williams. And it's wild because you look at the first couple years of his career. In 1939, he had 327, had a 1045 OPS, hit 344 in 1940, 406 in 1941, which is just crazy to think about. 406, a 553 on base percentage. The next year, you know, everything dropped about 50 points to a 356. 499 on base. And then, oh yeah, the next 3 years he didn't play for military service, World War II. And then he comes back and, oh, ho-hum, 342, 497 on base. It's just incredible when you look at some of these guys that played in that time frame and then just middle of their primes, go to war, come back, and then they're right back to it. It's just incredible to see some of those things. But last night, NBA basketball was on, and I want to get into the NBA parity discussion that seemed to go around the last couple of days. I want to talk about that because I don't know if it's a good thing. I don't think that whenever in your league, professional league, that it's a bad thing to have parity, but we'll get into that in just a second. Last night, the New York Knicks get back within a game of the Indiana Pacers, winning 106-100 with a great fourth quarter, outscoring the Pacers 36-20 in that final frame to get it done, because it looked dire in the end of that first half. The Pacers took a 20-point lead. Credit to Reggie Miller. I couldn't tell on the broadcast last night if Reggie Miller was trying to be so anti-Pacers and so down the middle and all this stuff, or if it was actually like legitimate commentary. Because, you know, the Pacers take a 20-point lead last night late in that first half, and then the Knicks are able to cut it to 13 going into the half. And the entire time, Reggie's like, I don't like how this first half is ending for Indiana. I think the Knicks might have found something here. And he kept bringing it up and over and over and over. And he's like, oh, by the way, I told you at the end of that first half, you know, the Pacers, I didn't like how they were finishing. The Knicks started to find something. And the Pacers actually started the second half decently well as well. But to his credit, the Knicks found a way. They got things going. And I thought they were in real trouble when Jalen Brunson picked up his fourth foul at the end of the first half. Karl-Anthony Towns is in foul trouble. And I think they do a good job on the broadcast of bringing this up, that Karl-Anthony Towns, I think he's proven to me over the last couple of years, last year and this year specifically, that he's a little bit better of a winning player than I thought previously. And maybe that's some growth on his part. Because I thought for the longest time with him in Minnesota that I had no issue with him as a player, but I didn't think he was a winning basketball player, specifically in the playoffs. Just didn't think he was that kind of guy that was going to propel you. And I think Anthony Edwards helped along there. I think now being in New York, having been with those guys, and maybe a little bit of a wake-up call when you were supposed to be the centerpiece of a franchise in your move. So I think a little bit of a wake-up call, but I think he's played a little bit better. But I think they do a good job of breaking it down that he always picks up 2 to 3 stupid fouls a game. And sure enough, he's in foul trouble again last night. But that fourth quarter hit, and Karl-Anthony Towns went nuts.
Backpack mode.
20 points for Cats in the fourth quarter, and really not a lot from Brunson in the fourth quarter. They got a little bit.
He was sitting for most of it.
He was sitting for a long time, and he got things going at the end there a little bit. Difficult floater in the lane late in that ball game, and I thought it was a really, really good game. It's been crazy to watch this series, though, because it's been back and forth and back and forth, and it's been close. I mean, you look at game one, goes to overtime. The Knicks should have won that game. The Pacers end up winning by 3, and then the Pacers end up winning by 5 in game 2, and then last night, the Knicks end up winning by 6. So this series has been decided by, like, 2 points.
Yeah.
So far. It's been crazy to see how close it was, yet at the same point, it's been a really tight series, and yet the Knicks were on the brink last night of being gone.
Yeah, it really looked like they were just on death's door. And then they just kind of started getting it going. Pascal Siakam had the cleanest contest I've ever seen in my life. That was called a foul.
Yep.
So I think the NBA was not going to allow this series to end in 4 games.
Well, they called in the extender last night.
Of course. Of course. That was.
I know
was
you were all over that. You're one of those guys that would definitely notice that the extender
of
is.
Of course, you have to. It's always a factor in the NBA playoffs. You need that one official who can kind of stretch a series out a little bit. And credit to the NBA. Scott Foster's their guy. But yeah, it was an incredible game last night. And I'm really glad we're going to get more games out of this series.
Yeah, and so tonight we'll get the Western Conference Finals game 4 of that series. And again, another team that looked like they were on the brink and then went nuts, the Minnesota Timberwolves. It wasn't quite the same way because games 1 and 2 were pretty dominant for OKC. Game 3 was the other way. 143-101 is just nuts to see.
It's crazy to see that type of scoreline in a conference final.
Yeah, I mean, frankly, this series has not been good. It's funny because sometimes we look back on certain series and we think favorably on them, but I think back to what year was it that Cleveland came back from 3-1? Was that 16?
It was 16 or 17. I think it was 16.
That finals was not good, except for Game 7. If you go back and look at that series, the first 6 games were seemingly all blowouts. It was not a good series, but Game 7 was so good that we all remember it as an incredible NBA Finals, when in reality it was just Game 7 that was so, so good. I'm trying to look up the games right now because, let's see, Game 1, it looks like... So Game 1, the Warriors won by 15. Game 2, the Warriors win 110-77. Game 3, the Cavaliers won by 30. Game 4, the Warriors won by 11. Game 5, the Cavs won by 15. Game 6, the Cavs won by 14, and then Game 7 was a 4-point game. So that series wasn't all that good. So who knows? Maybe this one has the same sort of thing, because the first 3 games of the series have not been good. And what makes it so interesting is if the Thunder had just lost that game by 15, I think we'd still think, oh, okay, Oklahoma City probably still runs away with it. You know, Minnesota, desperation, doesn't want to go down 3-0 on their home court. Comes out and plays well. But you lose by 42. I start to think, well, maybe they found something here. And so that's going to be interesting to watch tonight, because it's still kind of do or die. You don't want to go down 3-1. We've seen teams come back from 3-1 before, even against an Oklahoma City team, right? That Warriors team came back from 3-1 before they got beat 3-1 in the NBA Finals. So it's going to be interesting to see if Minnesota comes out with that same urgency. And I was seeing some things that were some adjustments that they are making. We'll see if they are able to adjust. But this series has been interesting to watch because, you know, this feels like whoever can win this one, they'll probably go on to win the NBA Finals, in my opinion. I just think whichever team comes out of the West is better than the teams in the Eastern Conference, whether it's the Knicks or the Pacers. But kind of whoever wins this series, and if they go on to win the NBA Finals, they almost get crowned as the new face of the NBA. Does it feel like that a little bit? Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is named the MVP, and it feels like he still hasn't got his real due among the average NBA fan. If he goes on to win the Western Conference Finals and in turn the NBA Finals, feels like he'll start getting some more of that cachet. It feels like on the other side of Minnesota that the NBA, and maybe it's just some of the Netflix documentaries and the prevalence of him on social media and different stuff, feels like they want Anthony Edwards to become the new face of the NBA. So it feels like this could be an opportunity for one of those guys to really capitalize on that.
Yeah, this is kind of a people have been talking about it all year. This feels like a torch passing type season because you've got a lot of the old guard, LeBron, Steph, KD, kind of on their way out. KD will play basketball until he croaks, I'm convinced of it. But you've got all these young talent that's budding up through the league, like Shea, and then you look at the Wizards, their young core, but a whole bunch of other guys, Flags coming into the league. Like this is the time where this is the transition period for the NBA. I think that we had something like this back in the early 2000s when LeBron and all those guys came in, and so this is kind of like just the reset of that. And this is the first season that it's really all coming to light.
So this is where it gets interesting because the NBA is going to have their seventh different champion in 7 years, which I think for most leagues we would look at that as a good thing. But I think for the NBA, it might be a little bit different just by the way that they've built their league, by the way that they've marketed their league. I'm not sure if it's the best thing. Now, I don't want to do this thing because we did this with baseball a couple years ago where it was the Diamondbacks and the Rangers in the World Series. And people were saying, oh, it's bad for baseball and this and that. Maybe it is. I'm not in their front office and figuring out how much money. I don't care. I really don't. Did all of a sudden baseball crumble because they had the Diamondbacks and the Rangers in the World Series? No, because then the next year they had Yankees and Dodgers, okay?
Because they learned, Toby.
Whatever it is, they're going to be okay, right? Like, I saw people saying, oh my gosh, if it's Thunder Pacers, that's going to be the worst finals ever. You'll be all right. Maybe next year it's Lakers Celtics, right? Like, you'll be okay. It's not going to be that big of a deal. Even if you don't tune in for a year, it's not that big of a deal. But I'm wondering if parity is good for the NBA. Because as much as people got tired of Warriors-Cavs, you kind of were watching all year thinking, okay, how is this Warriors team going to be able to beat the Cavs this year? How is this Cavs team going to be able to counter the Warriors this year? And you had other teams, but they market so strongly on their stars. And not teams, on stars. And so when Steph Curry's in it, you watch. Not for the Warriors, but for Steph Curry. When LeBron's in it, you don't watch for whatever team LeBron's on. You watch for LeBron. Take your pick of whatever superstar you want. Jokic, Giannis, whoever it is. James Harden back in the day. Whatever it may be. You watch for the superstars. And I think they've run into a problem now where the four teams that are left have superstars. There's no question about it. Tyrese Halliburton was voted most overrated, and he's played incredible in this playoffs.
Lights out.
Jalen Brunson, really, really good player. Karl-Anthony Towns has played really, really well. Last night, 20 points in the fourth quarter. Anthony Edwards could be the next face of the league. Looks like someone that could be the next face of USA basketball in the next couple of years when the old guard kind of moves on, and we're looking at the 2028 Olympics in L.A., and he could be the leader of Team USA. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander just won MVP, averaging 35-5. And yet it feels like he doesn't get a lot of recognition. I think they've run into a problem with the way that they've marketed their league, that because these guys haven't reached that pinnacle yet, haven't been built up yet, that, yes, the parity's a good thing, so that you can have more teams winning. But I think people are more caring about stars than teams in this league.
For sure. And I think you're going to see a lot of that change over. Well, not in terms of, they're going to market even harder on the stars.
And they should.
The NBC, they're coming along with the NBA rights and all that. And have you seen any of the commercials that they've been doing?
Or the bits and pieces, yeah.
Yeah, the thing is, like, they're star heavy. Like, Giannis is in them. I think Jokic is in one of them. But, like, that is what NBC is going to be leaning into a lot. So I think that's, you're going to see a lot more of that, especially with a lot of these young guys, because that's something we've kind of lost with the ESPN and TNT of it all. Like, it feels like all the commercials and ads for these series are all, like, the exact same thing. Like, you roll a highlight or two, you tell people what time the game is, and then you show another highlight, and you're like, and all right, you throw the graphic up, and boom, you're out.
Well, and I think they've run into a problem, too, where some of these guys haven't been marketed as much. Frankly, I don't think they've done a good enough job with Shea. He's a fun basketball player to watch. Some of the stuff is annoying with the foul baiting. Him and Brunson do a little bit of that, and I've seen a lot of people getting frustrated with that. That's how they play basketball.
Yeah.
I know it gets annoying. James Harden kind of started this style of basketball. These guys are doing it a little bit differently than he was, but pretty similar play styles. It's annoying to watch at times, but they're also incredibly skilled.
Yeah.
I think that Shea, even if he wasn't shooting whatever amount of free throws a game, I think he could still be a really, really good player. Obviously, MVP of the league this year. But I think part of the issue that you run into is the way that the league is talked about as well. Because you think about some of these other leagues.
NBA fans don't like basketball. Well, I'm convinced.
Just think about how every time, we saw it here in D.C. for a little bit with Bradley Beal. Say it for what you want, but so long, right?
I saw you shudder when you said Bradley
Beal. The conversation was, we got to get Bradley Beal to a good team, right? We got to get Giannis out of Milwaukee. We got to get Dame out of Portland. We got to do this and that. We got to get these guys to winning basketball organizations. And you run into an issue when it's like, well, did you want Giannis to leave Milwaukee and go to Indiana? Because Indiana is still in the Eastern Conference Finals.
That would be nuts, by the way.
You know what I'm saying? Like, in the NFL, we all clown the Chargers, right? We make fun of them. They have a great quarterback. We're not saying, you know what? Justin Herbert should be in Pittsburgh. No one's having that conversation. No one's saying that. In baseball, think about with Shohei Ohtani and Mike Trout in L.A. There's been a little bit of that discussion, like, man, I wish those guys could have played meaningful baseball. But it wasn't, man, Shohei and Mike Trout need to leave L.A. It was, man, they did a horrible job of building around those guys. Why is that never the conversation in the NBA? Why is that never the conversation? It's always, well, I think this ship is run. Its course is run. Let's get them out of wherever it is. Why, like, Linnell knows how to push my buttons a little bit.
Yeah, he gets good at that.
I spent some time in Milwaukee, so I'm a little bit biased towards the Milwaukee Bucks. But, like, why is all the conversation now, oh, got to get Giannis out of Milwaukee. Let's get him to New York. Let's get him to L.A. I think that's part of the problem they've run into. Look at the teams that are left. There's only one of those teams left that is in that major market, the New York Knicks, right? Do you think you're like, let's get Giannis out of Milwaukee and send him to Oklahoma City? That'll move the needle. Like, look, I have no problem with these teams winning. But I think you kind of miss the point when they've run into the problem where everything is about their stars and then getting their stars to major markets, whether it's New York, whether it's L.A., whether it's Chicago, whatever it may be. It's, oh, okay, well, now it's run its course. Like, in 3 years, say the Oklahoma City Thunder have disappointed. There have been some injuries, some stuff. How quickly do you think it would be if the Oklahoma City Thunder are the 8th seed and they finish just barely above 500 and sneak in the backside of the Western Conference playoffs? You're like, well, maybe we should get Shea to go join Luka with the Lakers.
Luka and Giannis, because Giannis will be a Laker
right?
by then.
You see what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
This is where they run into it, where it's not just the fact that they focus on their stars. It's also how much they try to get the stars to leave their markets that they're in. Like, that's part of the issue here. And so, you know, Oklahoma City doing it the right way, which I think is what Will Dawkins wants to do here, by the way. So, if you're a Wizards fan, you got to have a little patience. You got to have a little luck.
Let them cook.
Because they had Paul George, and that turned into Shea and a bunch of picks. So, you got to see if you can find one of those.
Let's recap that trade, Toby.
That's a wild one. That is a wild, like, as crazy as the Juan Soto trade was for the Nationals, how about the Oklahoma City Thunder trading Paul George, by the way,
who's
at that point.
Cooked food, by the way.
Well, Paul George was awesome still at that point.
It's true. But Paul now George he's podcast P.
Paul George was an MVP candidate at one point in Oklahoma City. People forget that.
Oh, I remember.
Finished third in MVP voting, I believe.
Something like that, yeah.
He was awesome for that 1 year, and then they traded him the next year. He was great. But getting Shea after basically, I think, 1 year in L.A. with the Clippers.
Was he traded on? No.
He'd been there for 1 year.
Yeah,
I know he played.
Yeah, he did. Because I was thinking of him getting traded on draft night because he got drafted by...
I have no idea.
It was the Sixers and then the Clippers
but
traded.
But he's incredibly talented. Yeah. They ended up with a lot. But I think that's part of the problem, too, is everything is, oh, we've got to get these guys out of this market to this market. And now we look at where these teams are at. Minnesota, Oklahoma City, and Indiana are still left. And if these teams were to underachieve, we'd be trying to get all their superstars out of there. So I think that's where some of the rhetoric and some of these things need to change. And look, I think for the long run, if the NBA can have this kind of parity, it's probably not a bad thing. But for a league that has been built on its stars and throughout its history has been built on dynasties, look, I don't think it's a bad thing, but I do think some people are going to be a little bit frustrated that they don't have a dynasty to root against, because there isn't one right now. You know, like, you know, growing up, it was maybe the Lakers, or there was a Celtics, or you think back even in time to the 80s, it was the Lakers and the Celtics. In the 90s, it was the Bulls. Like, you had teams that you wanted to root against, or you hopped on the bandwagon and cheered for your favorite player for those teams. Now it's like, well, there's no dynasty. There is none. There just isn't one. So there's, you know, I think there's still some players that are hated overall, but there's no team that you're like, oh, I'm done with that one. The Warriors were a couple of years ago, but since they won their finals a couple of years ago, it just has, you know, when they were going against the Cavaliers, because even the one against the Celtics was kind of coming out of nowhere. I felt like that team had no chance, and they ended up beating Boston. I don't know. I don't know that it's a bad thing. I don't know that you can ever say that parity in a league is a bad thing, because it means if you feel like everyone has a chance, except for the Washington Wizards. And like, right? It feels like they just, hopefully they'll be there in a few years. Real quick, I want to get into the NFL, though. Who do you want to win? Because I would love to see Minnesota. Like, if I had to, first of all, I don't want anyone in the Eastern Conference. I do not like the Indiana Pacers. The New York Knicks are fine to me, whatever, but I'm not a big fan of Brunson and the way that he plays. But I would prefer Minnesota, because I think Anthony Edwards could be the next face of the league, and he'd be a blast to watch. I can live with Shea and the Thunder getting it done.
Yeah.
So that's kind of how I'd rank it. I'd probably go Minnesota, OKC, Indiana, or no, New York Knicks, then Indiana. How about you?
I'd probably flip Indiana and the Knicks right there for me. But see, that's the thing. It would be really nice to see the torch get passed to either of these guys, Shea or Ant, because they're both just so fun. You know who Shea's biggest like marketing tool is?
Shea
and Twitter.
Yeah, 100%.
Because he's been getting knocked out by Shea's aura. It just kills me every time.
Yeah, the aura.
And so for that very reason, I think I've talked myself into the Thunder, just because of like all the edits we're going to get of Shea hoisting a trophy. He's going to, people will be hopping on the Shea train if they close out a title.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting one to watch tonight with you. Got the game 4 for the Thunder and Timberwolves, game 4 for the Pacers and the Knicks going to be tomorrow night. Been a good playoffs overall, I think. Been fun to watch. Want to get back into the NFL, though. John Keim had a piece in ESPN talking about how the Commanders have helped Jaden Daniels this offseason. We'll go into that next. You want to hop in, feel free, 800-636-1067. Toby Altizer in for the Junks on Memorial Day. It is the Sports Junkies on a Memorial Day. Toby Altizer in for the guys today. They'll be back tomorrow morning at 6 a.m. If you'd like to hop in at any point during the show, 800-636-1067. You can also tweet at me at Toby_Altizer. John Keim wrote a piece about the Commanders a couple of days ago on Saturday, talking about how this team is built to help Jaden Daniels this season, how they approach this offseason, making sure they help Jaden Daniels. Because, you know, when you think about teams over the last couple of years that have done what Washington has did, there's one example, and it's the Houston Texans. And it was funny hearing, you know, just as you replay some of these segments, people have talked about the things that people have said about these various teams, and no one really expected the Texans to have the turnaround that they did a couple of years ago. And then they kind of had a little bit of a fall off this past season. And then going into this past year with Jaden Daniels, a bunch of people were like, well, Washington could be the new Texans. And I was like, well, let's chill out a little bit. You don't want to get a little ahead of yourself. And sure enough, last year they were even better than the Texans and went to the NFC title game. So how do they make sure that, unlike the Texans last year, who took a step back after C.J. Stroud's rookie year and struggled a little bit in his second year. How do you make sure that that doesn't happen? And I think Keim lays out a bunch of good things here. He has 3 points. I want to start with his last point, though, because I think this one is huge. And I've brought this up a couple of times this offseason as to why, when you look at what happened to C.J. Stroud and where he went from his rookie season to his second season, there's a reason that I don't think that you'll see Jaden have those sort of struggles. Which, by the way, second-year struggles for C.J. Stroud still meant that they got into the playoffs and won a playoff game, which I think you'd have to take as a successful season for Washington if you're looking at it right now. If they got back into the playoffs and won a playoff game for a second straight year, I think you consider that a successful season. I know a lot of people are looking at it and saying, well, you went to the NFC title game last year, you got to build off that. Well, frankly, the only way that you can build off going to an NFC title game is going to the Super Bowl. I don't want to set expectations that high. I would love for them to do it. I generally am a, and you can probably tell by my work, I'm a undersell, overdeliver. Hopefully, undersell, overdeliver. Don't set the expectations too high, or then you always disappoint. If you set the bar real low, then you can get right above that bar and you feel a lot better about yourself. I don't want to set unrealistic expectations. I don't want to look at it as, well, year two of Jaden, it's Super Bowl or bust. Like, let's chill out a little bit on that, right? But I think you still want to see this team take that next step. I think there's a real chance this year. I know G and D were having this discussion a couple of weeks ago of, would you take 10 wins right now, or do you want to see the season played out? I would take 10 wins right now because I feel like this team can be better than they were last year and still only win 10 games. A little more difficult schedule. I don't necessarily buy into all the, oh, strength of schedule. It's that much harder. It's hard every year. There's no gimmies on the schedule ever. Last year, we looked at Carolina as a gimme, and then Jaden got hurt, and then they still
beat them by 40.
Destroyed them, right? Like, there are no gimmies on an NFL schedule. There just aren't. There's maybe less easy games this year than last year. But the way this team was playing down the stretch, they could beat just about anybody. They could beat just about anybody. They beat Detroit in the playoffs, getting their best shot, right? So
yeah, Detroit was really hurt, though.
They were. But to me, like, I don't want to discredit anything they did last year. I also don't want to set expectations too high for this upcoming season.
Sure. Like,
so you wouldn't take the 10 wins, just judging by your visual reaction back there.
Yeah, I mean, well, that's the thing. Like, if I know I'm getting 10 wins, sure, but I'd rather let the season play out because, I mean, you never know what's going to happen. A couple bounces go your way. You can beat a team you're maybe not supposed to beat.
Yeah, and I mean, some of those bounces went their way last year.
A lot of bounces went their way last year.
I hate doing that because, to me, you have to be in those positions for them to go your way.
But, like, that interception against Philadelphia in the first game, you don't get that opportunity back unless Devontae Smith drops that pass, you know?
Sure. And I mean, you have a doink in the playoff game. You have a Hail Mary. We can go through all these things.
Could have won more games, too. You mentioned the doink against Dallas.
Dallas. Like, yeah. Look, man, I hate doing that. I do.
Just a couple bounces of the ball.
If I had to, I'm on the other side. You won those football games. Sure, you got some breaks. There are also breaks that went the other way. I don't love living on that. Like, well, they won a lot of games in the last play. Well, okay, sure, they did. But also, they were in a tie ball game in which they drove it down at the end and kicked a field goal. And, like, you think the ball's somehow going to go the other way? Sure, they could miss the field goal and they lose in overtime. Okay. But I don't like doing that. Look, I don't think that, oh, the luck went their way this past season. It can't this season. Whatever, man. I don't like that argument. I just don't. I know that's going to be a narrative. You're going to have a bunch of people telling you that going into this year. A lot of stuff bounced their way. It can't this year. Whatever, man.
Not saying a lot it of can't. Stuff, it's just,
let me tell you this, Max. Yeah. A lot of stuff goes your way when you have the better quarterback.
It's true.
And there's only a couple of teams that when this team matches up with them, that the other team has the better quarterback. And it's like Pat Mahomes, Josh Allen, and
Joe Burrow, Lamar, and end of list.
Yeah, it's not many. And yeah, even then, I'll take my chances with 5 against any of them.
Right.
And you're going to see them up against a lot of these guys. And I look, man, if I could have anybody to start a team with, in the National Football League right now if we redrafted?
Very easy.
It's pretty easy. Very I'm taking Jaden Daniels.
Yeah.
So with that said, miss me with all the they got lucky, this and that. Look, man, when you've got the better quarterback, a lot of stuff goes your way. A lot of the stuff on the margin goes your way. I don't think that there was a single team, and I mean this, when they played in the playoffs last year, I don't think there was a single team that made the playoffs that had, at least in the NFC, that had a worse roster than what Washington had. I think Washington was definitively the seventh best roster of the seven teams to make the playoffs. But when you count in the fact that they had the best quarterback in the NFC, okay, I'll take my chances. And in turn, you saw what happened. And yes, they struggled in the NFC title game, but it wasn't Five's fault.
Yeah.
It wasn't Five's fault.
I mean, you know what he said after the Chicago, after the Hail Mary, right? It's just what happens when you're living right.
Exactly right. Exactly right. He also was yelling, I'm like that.
That's right.
He is like that, right? Like having that dude on your side fixes a lot of problems. So, look, regardless of where you feel on that topic of the would you take the 10 wins or not, whatever. I think, to me, this team is going to be better this season, regardless of what the record is, because I think they still make the playoffs. But do I think they win 12 games definitively and or they get to 13 wins so they're technically better record-wise? Look, man, they could win 10 games, they could win 11 games, and they're still better than the 12-win team they had last year. Just the way the ball bounces sometimes, just the difficulty of the schedule, all that stuff, I get it. They could very well win 14 games, too. I'm not discounting that. But I think with where they're at, I don't want to set the expectations too high. But back to what John Keim had written, the most important point and the reason why I don't see him having, speaking of Jaden Daniels, having a year two drop like you saw from C.J. Stroud. They're different styles of players, one, and we can get into that more in just a little bit. But the number one reason is their offensive coordinator stayed the same, and it did in Houston as well, but Bobby Slowick doesn't have a job in Houston anymore.
Which is crazy to think about considering he was a big-time head coaching candidate going back to last cycle.
Exactly right. I really like Bobby Slowick.
A lot of people did.
He didn't have a job in Houston anymore. He was not good last season. I have a lot more confidence that Cliff Kingsbury isn't just going to lay an egg and be somewhere else next season. If he's somewhere else next season, it's not because he got fired here.
Yeah.
If he's somewhere else next season, it's because he got hired as a head coach because Jaden Daniels was great once again. You have a guy that has head coaching experience that now has had those head coaching responsibilities essentially taken away and put into a spot now where he can focus on his baby, which is the offensive side. And he can dive deep into the offensive side. He doesn't have to worry about motivating the entire team. Mm-hmm. He doesn't have to worry about practice schedules. He doesn't have to worry about meeting with the media. He doesn't have to worry about being the headliner, the face of a whole organization. He doesn't have to worry about any of that. He's the offensive coordinator, man. He's the second or third guy in charge. He don't have to worry about being the head dog. That's Dan Quinn. He's got that handled. And so because of that, I think he's going to be able to continue to spend time evolving and adjusting. Remember last year in the middle of the year, we're talking about the cliff, and I don't know how much of the cliff was Cliff versus some of it was Jaden being a little bit banged up. But that kind of went away as soon as they got going down the stretch, right?
Yeah.
So I think that you've seen him already be able to evolve and get better and things that he wasn't able to previously do as a head coach. Now that he's just an offensive coordinator, I think it's totally different. And I think that's the main point here because we're going to talk about some other moves that they made this offseason in terms of improving the roster around him. But that stuff is obviously really important on the football field. But if your offensive coordinator isn't doing you any help, like Bobby Slowick with C.J. Stroud last year, then I don't care how good of a quarterback you are, you still have to have some sort of structure. You have to have a good offensive mind. I think Cliff is that. And I think having him for a second year is massive for Jaden and having him understanding that he's going to be able to build. Because when you look at the offense last year in week one, it was like a 100-level course.
Mm-hmm.
It's very basic. And Jaden didn't even trust the 100-level stuff. It took him a little bit. Remember, he didn't throw his first touchdown pass till week three, and his first touchdown pass was to Trent Scott.
All-time trivia answer.
Right? So it took a little bit for him to settle in. But think about the difference in the offense you saw in Tampa week one versus the offense you saw in Tampa in the wild card game. that went from a 100 level class, very basic, to we're talking 300, 400 level stuff. And a lot of the guys from last year are back, including the entire coaching staff, right? So for the most part, you're going to be able to start maybe not at like a 300 level, but you're going to start at a 200 level. And your quarterback, who's now been in that system, can operate at the 400 level.
And he'll be able to teach very easily the 200 level stuff.
Exactly right. And so getting guys accustomed to that, I think, is going to be massive. I think that's the biggest part of all of this. They improved a lot with the offensive line and some of the playmakers, which we're going to dive into here in just a second. But I think keeping Cliff Kingsbury and him not having a fall off like Bobby Slowick did last year, I think is going to be massive for Jaden.
For sure.
800-636-1067 if you'd like to hop in. I do want to talk about some of the other things that John Kime mentioned here, talking about some of the additions on offense to help out Jaden Daniels, making sure he doesn't have that sophomore slump, so to speak, which, by the way, everyone can miss me with, well, Jaden Daniels could have the sophomore slump. I don't believe it. I don't believe it's going to happen. I don't think it's going to. I think he's going to be spectacular. But what are some of the things that Washington did a good job of to make sure that he is set up for the most success in year number two? We'll continue talking about it. You're listening to Sports Junkies on 106.7 The Fan.
We manifest a lot of things that we want. And I've always taught my kids, what you want, you manifest. And going back to his college days, he has a sign, I will play in the NFL. And, you know, not only playing, I mean, he's cementing his legacy. And, you know, like the sophomore slumps and all that, like, we're not worried about that. Like, he, boy puts too much time and effort. He really loves this sport, like, to where he would compromise other things just for the love of the game.
I was Jaden's mom on the Pivot podcast. Toby Altizer in for the Junkies today. I need him to have a sign that says, I will win a Super Bowl.
I'm sure it's there somewhere. We just haven't heard about it.
Maybe put, I will win 8 Super Bowls so he can be the GOAT. I'll take something like that.
I like it.
By the way, that's my favorite stat that no one ever talks about because we don't like to praise Tom Brady. But Tom Brady has more Super Bowls than any one franchise in the NFL.
It's pretty
nuts. He is the franchise.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Maybe Jaden can be that guy. Jaden is the franchise here.
God, I hope.
And there's no question that he is. I think that Adam Peters did a good job this offseason of doing a couple things to make sure that Jaden can avoid that sophomore slump. Look, I think that the beautiful part about all this is that you know your quarterback. If he has a sophomore slump, it isn't Jaden's fault. Like, it's just the natural progression. Like, you know for a fact that Jaden Daniels is working his tail off day in, day out to be as good as possible.
He's looking big as hell.
He looks bulked up, right? You know for a fact that he's working his tail off. So, for me, like, I have all the confidence in the world that he's going to be able to avoid that. He's going to actually be able to be better in year two, which is crazy to think about with how good he was in his rookie season. Like, he's going to just keep getting better. I'm confident in that because he works so hard and he does everything possible to make sure that he's prepared. So that doesn't worry me. And then even when he goes through a down spell, it doesn't worry me that he's not going to be able to figure it out because he'll be able to make adjustments. So it's nice to understand that on his side, everything's taken care of. I think on the other side, with Adam Peters, what he did this offseason to help him out made a lot of sense. Because, look, I think a lot of people wanted to see the offense add more playmakers. And they did. Bring in a guy like Debo, which people would laugh if they heard me with B. Mitch and Finley the other day with Linnell, apparently saying that Debo going for 800 yards from scrimmage next year is somehow the worst thing ever, considering he's done that 2 of the last 3 years. Whatever. I'm not the biggest Debo guy. That's totally fine, though. I would love for him to go for 1,500 yards from scrimmage, similar to what he did a couple of years ago in 21, when he went for 1,700 yards. I don't think he's going to have that kind of a season. But there's no denying the fact that he's an upgrade over what their second option was last season. Now, I don't view him as a true wide receiver. I view him more as a weapon. But regardless, I think he's going to help out the offense. Terry and Jaden, I think, are going to have a better rapport than what they had at the beginning of last year. So I think a full 17 games where they're starting more towards where they were at the end of the season and continuing to build. I think the playmakers overall are going to be better than they were last season, including some of the young guys. A guy like Luke McCaffrey, year number 2 now. A guy like a Ben Sinnott, can he step in and play more of a role in year two? Can Jalen Lane, as a rookie, step in and help you out as someone that was really helpful for the Hokies? So I think they have the playmakers necessary to be able to be successful this season. I think they've upgraded that group. Maybe not as much as I would have liked. I'd still like to see a running back. I think that, look, B-Rob's okay. Eckler's okay. I would have liked to have seen one more weapon. One more. To me, they're still a weapon shy, whether it was a vertical tight end threat, because I like Zach Ertz, but he's more the security blanket, whether it was a speedy wide receiver to put opposite Terry just to make the safeties have to pay more attention to the other side of the field, I'm hoping it's Lane. I would love for it to be Lane.
I think it might be.
And maybe it will be. He wasn't really used that way at Virginia Tech, so it'll be interesting to see if they would do that.
Did Virginia Tech have the quarterback play of the Washington
Commanders?
They did
not. They did not. And he has the speed to do it, right? A 4-3 guy. So maybe they would do that. I would love to have seen a explosive running back in the backfield. They don't really have that unless Lil Bill can get things figured out. Ja'Cory Kroski-Merritt and his nickname.
Would you kick the tires on any names out there right now in the running back room?
Not really.
No Dobbins, no Chubb. That doesn't interest you?
Maybe Dobbins, but even then, that's not really exciting to me.
So I said Nick Chubb, and you just passed on it.
Yeah, I'll pass.
No? Okay, no. Interesting.
He's not explosive. That's kind of what I want. The guy that I'm picturing is Jaden Daniels runs a read option, mm-hmm. and the end plays Jaden, and this guy takes it up the middle, breaks one tackle,
yeah.
gone, 60 okay. to the house.
Yeah.
That's not Nick Chubb.
True.
I don't think that's J.K. Dobbins. Fair. I think that maybe someone becomes available at some point in the offseason
mm-hmm.
as things kind of wind down, but I don't.
Yeah, once you hit training camp.
I don't see one of those. I don't really see one of those. But real quick, the thing that I think made the most sense, that this is why Adam Peters is in charge, and I'm glad I'm not, is they fixed the offensive line. You have to understand how poorly this offensive line has played the last couple of years, where it has not been a strength of this team for a long time. And fixing the offensive line, where you get Laremy Tunsil, and then you double down in the draft when we're looking at edge rusher, we're looking at receiver, we're looking at maybe even running back, could they go corner? They go offensive tackle again in Josh Connerly, and they improve the offensive line. And again, when you came out of the Super Bowl, having watched that game, and the team that won the Super Bowl, by the way, you play twice a year, they're in your division, and by the way, spanked you in the NFC title game to get to the Super Bowl. But they absolutely obliterated the Chiefs' offensive line. And all we talked about the weeks after that was, well, you want to beat Philadelphia, you better be good in the trenches, and especially on the offensive line. And yet somehow we missed the mark as the season went on, or the offseason went on, to think like, huh, why are they making all these moves? Like, we love the Tunsil move. And I think as time's gone on now, fans are like, I like the Connerly move as well. But in the moment, some fans are like, man, I wanted a weapon. Man, I wanted this. Look, protecting Jaden Daniels had to be your number one priority this offseason, and they did just that. So I think fixing the offensive line was absolutely paramount, and I think they did, because now Tunsil at left tackle is a plus. Josh Connerly, thinking he's going to step in at right tackle, is a plus, which means that Brandon Coleman stepping in at right or left guard is a plus. I think Biadasz is a plus at center. Sam Cosmi is obviously a plus at right guard when he's healthy. Suddenly you've got five pluses when, for the majority, since Trent Williams has left, it's been four negatives and one plus, maybe. Right? So credit to him for fixing the offensive line. Anytime you have an investment in a guy like a Jaden Daniels and a valuable asset, a guy like Jaden Daniels, anytime you decide to protect that guy, you're never going to hear anything bad about that from me. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, I want to take a look at some baseball. It seems like nationally, some people are revisiting this Juan Soto trade that the Nationals made a couple of years ago. I think it's time for us to take a look at it as well, because I think when you look back on it, you see a lot of favorable stuff on the national side. We'll talk about that next. You're listening to the Sports Junkies on Memorial Day here on The Fan.